You're listening to Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken on the Tangent Bound Network.
Do not adjust your settings. Take your hands off the keys. Your search is over. These are the geeks you're looking for. You found Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken.
This is going to be quite a ride.
Hey, Jim! Boom! That's a bad outfit! Boom!
I love you.
Me too, man. Hit me! My turn! Am I the meanest?
Sure enough!
Am I the prettiest?
Sure enough!
Am I the baddest mofo no down around this town?
Sure enough!
Well, who am I?
Sure enough!
The Shogun of Harlem.
For what lies ahead, ready are you?
We're police officers. We're not trained to handle this kind of violence.
Hey, Geeksters, I'm Kylan.
And I'm Ken.
And you found Geek Watch 1.
Welcome back, Geeksters, issue 114 of Geek Watch 1. And this is going to be a little bit interesting issue. It's another one of our interviews, but this one's going to take most of the actual show.
Yeah, we have a big one this time, and I fought so hard to not disclose.
anything about this one, you teased it for the last couple weeks.
He's been good.
I was ready to just go ahead and say we were going to do it because it was locked in.
But you know, I didn't. Things always happen at the last minute, you know.
Yeah.
And so we have Merle Rasmussen, the creator of Top Secret, which was TSR's first non-fantasy role-playing game.
And it's actually recognized as the world's first espionage role-playing game.
It is, yes. And it was a game that made me love role-playing games. Like, and it is, this was, and I told him this was my Gygax moment.
Yeah.
But
before we get too far, and since there's not that much time left, go right now to Kickstarter, look up Top Secret New World Order. You have until Thursday, what's the date on that?
The 27th.
Thursday, July 27th at 11 a.m. You have until then to get in on the Kickstarter. They're already, at time of recording, which you guys know we record this on Sunday, he's made it a little bit more than what they were asked for.
Just a touch.
The numbers, according to this right here, he is sitting at $102,515 pledged out of $12,000 asked for.
Yeah. Now, mind you, when you listen to the interview was done
A few days ago,
and at that point, it was at 98.
Yeah, he was just under.
Yeah.
So, no.
Well, I think it was within the next, I think the next day is when the Kickstarter update email came out that they broke 100.
Yes.
I think that was on Thursday after you guys recorded Wednesday night. So, he's getting like a couple thousand a day now.
That is awesome.
I've never seen a Kickstarter. I mean, this Kickstarter actually hit its goal. We said within a couple of hours,
2 to 3 hours of
You know,
being
and
there.
So I can understand wanting to go conservative, you know. But
you said, it's having this much extra allows them to do a little bit extra, then everybody can get a little bit of cash out of it, and it's all going to be good.
Yes.
And it allowed and it actually works well to start off because TSR doing this. It's basically a startup company at this point.
They are.
They have equity built into the name.
They do.
Obviously.
Right.
And but the company's brand new.
It is. And to see, for your first product, you know, to be so widely received is huge.
Well, it definitely helps that gamers never forget.
Yes.
No, we don't.
You know, so you have enough people who played the original who were scouring everywhere to find versions of the original even now because you couldn't get anything like it, and so it's really not a surprise that basically the fan base came through and they get what they want out of it.
Well, exactly. I mean, I would hit, you know, if I was going to a gaming con, I would check to see was there a table that was doing Top Secret, because you had Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder and all the other games were out there, and I was like, well, maybe there's a table that was playing Top Secret. it never happened, and I thought that maybe I was the only person who had any love for this game still out there, like me, maybe two other people.
You know what?
But I was wrong.
You know what that means? Because I know you have this game.
Yeah.
Con on the Cob needs to run at least one top secret game.
Yes.
And I know someone who might be able to put a game on the schedule.
I don't know, dude. I am not an admin.
Yeah, but you know what? It's for the sake of introducing a new crowd to the game.
Yeah,
especially if you get the new one before Con of the Cob. What you do is you just put up Top Secret on the board.
Right.
And if you get the New World Order, we run New World Order.
Everyone gets introduced to the new one. There's a module built in
ready to go. Yeah. What did Vicky have? Well, no, we can't do it at our party. That's too much stuff.
No,
that's a party. It's not a gaming.
Yeah, that game is like a 2 to 4 hour session right
so,
there.
So does that mean I need to have that much alcohol?
Well, it's a toga party this year. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I've already got
that's a lot of alcohol we need.
A couple ideas.
And it's adults only this year, so come on.
Yes. And Vicky was suggesting, and actually I think we need to we'll make sure John's actually at the door this year taking care of that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it'll be all ages until the stage shuts down.
Yeah.
Then everybody's out except for the adults.
Yeah. Get an hour or so.
So,
but togas are required. That's all we're saying.
Oh, yeah. Togas are required.
Togas required.
Yeah, we'll get back.
I know people who are already looking at their togas and...
I gotta do some YouTube work and find out how to wrap a toga out of a bread sheet and stuff.
Just remember, you will technically be in public. So, everyone who's
doing... Until you get to the party.
Everyone who's doing the toga thing, we're not banning pictures. Okay, just saying that now. We're not banning people from taking photos, so be prepared.
Yeah.
We got vintage Star Wars sheets.
I have a couple of old Star Wars bed sheets that I maybe
not,
in a Star
it's
Wars
not like
they might not fit you.
It's not like a kilt where commando is required. Okay? Just, you can wear something underneath. Just in case, because I just have a feeling there will be certain people trying to just undo the knots on everyone's togas.
Commando's required in a kilt?
Technically speaking, commando is required.
Yeah, but technically a kilt that you're talking about with commando required, you can't see anything anyway, because the way it's wrapped up, it's like 9 yards
so much material,
of fabric.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of which, I should thank Sarah, our buddy Sarah Granville, for tagging me in a little something from San Diego Comic-Con of men in kilts doing yoga. Thank you, Sarah.
Oh my God.
was it as good as watching the Indian leg wrestling in kilts?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Mike did it.
Indian leg wrestling in a kilt in the hallways at Con on the Cob back in the old hotel. So
that can happen. But we could do leg wrestling in togas.
We could. You know what? We get Kylan about 3/4 way through the party. Kylan would probably go, "No problem, I'll do it."
Not sure.
That's when I stole pretzels that night.
Yeah. So, since we're getting to that, what have you guys been doing this week? Other than being totally inundated with everything Comic-Con right
That's
now.
That's right.
Actually, I finished a graphic novel, The Coldest City, which is the source material for Atomic Blonde.
Okay.
So I finished that. And
it's a quick read. He did it in one night.
Yeah.
Do you have the Cinemark app on your phone?
I do not.
I do.
If you go to the rewards part of it, there's complimentary screening of Atomic Blonde.
Oh, okay then.
Like, the Tuesday before it opens up at Valley View. I'm not sure if we're going to go up, but you can get
we'll
there's
consider
a,
it.
Yeah. I think you may only be able to get one ticket through it. I don't know.
Right.
So you may have to, Kylie may have to download the app too. I don't know.
Well, we'll see that.
Yeah, that's definitely the show, the movie that we want to see.
Yeah.
We actually got a chance, we did go and see Valerian.
Mm-hmm.
And it was everything I expected it to be. I heard our buddy Phil from Oddmall. We met him. He was there with his wife. The one thing he had, the one twist in the movie he saw coming.
Okay.
For the main villain.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that's the only thing that took anything down for him. But that's just a normal thing with a movie. Sometimes they hit it perfect. Sometimes they don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For me, that doesn't really take down from the movie.
Right.
It's just it's a little bit more predictable.
And plus, Valerian's kind of more of a movie to see, not to really think about
too
hard.
Oh, and it was beautiful. We saw it on the XD screen. We didn't see it in 3D.
Yeah.
I want to go back and see it in 3D now, looking at
the way
it is.
I heard from someone that 3D was pretty exceptional.
Yeah. So, it was an awesome movie. We're going to actually talk more about that later, because we're not going to put any spoilers out right now for it.
Right.
It'll probably be in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because next week, we do have the Malted Meeple again.
But this is another one, just don't listen to what is it, Rotten Tomatoes and critics actually go and see it.
Yeah, I heard some of the critics weren't really liking it. They were talking about how it's pretty and that's all there is to it.
Well, that's the thing. Critics are so concerned about story most of the time that, yeah.
It's not even that. They were comparing it to Star Wars and everything else.
No. I wouldn't even compare that. It's a fantasy, but that's where it ends.
I've always looked at Star Wars, I don't lump in with just science fiction. Star Wars is such a broad range of, it's science fiction, it's fantasy, there's all these other things in it.
Yeah. Right.
There's Western parts in it, there's all kinds of things, and Star Wars is its own thing.
Right.
Now, you could put this with Star Trek, maybe, but this was more of your old school high fantasy. This is what you expected out of the 60s and 70s authors or sci-fi.
Right, yeah.
Just shows these are critics that shouldn't be being critics in the first place.
Well, they're movie critics.
Well, yeah. See, the other thing is critics are just paid to write about every single movie.
Yeah,
Even if it's not the type of thing they like to watch. So
yeah, those are the ones that are sitting in the corner sleeping.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. They miss most of the movie anyway.
So, but no, Valerian was beautiful, and it was a classic high science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a fun adventure story. There was. And the City of a Thousand Planets they talk about has every... It's similar. It reminds me of... We've talked about Babylon 5 a couple times.
Yeah.
Where it has every environment imaginable in it. This giant station has every environment imaginable in it. And they go through just about all of them.
Oh, okay.
Including, you'll recognize this from Total Recall, that they call it Paradise Alley, but it's Venusville.
Oh, nice. Okay. Nice. Yeah.
So we'll have more about that in a couple weeks.
It's good stuff. So, but
next week at the Meeple.
Oh, yes. Next week at the Meeple on the 29th. Come and join us at 1 p.m. That's 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday now.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to actually be talking a little bit D23, but I think we've covered a lot of what D23 was. But we're going to take the next week and try to figure out what actually happened at Comic-Con. There's been so much stuff coming out that it's kind of confusing.
This year has been huge for them just releasing trailers of everything.
Right.
It's in past years, it's kind of been much more, you know, there are these 4 or 5 movies coming out that everyone really wants to know about, and so here's a teaser or here's a trailer. This year, it's like every single flipping movie for the next year and a half, plus TV shows, but like everything has been at Comic-Con, and I've been having a hard time keeping up. I've been trying to post stuff on our page. If you go to Facebook, if you want to see all the major trailers, I've been trying to post them there. I've also been retweeting a lot of the news or like TV trailers and stuff on our Twitter account. So we're going to talk about all of it, though.
Yeah,
and some of the comic companies. Well, you know, the thing is, comic companies are all multimedia already, so you're getting the trailers.
Yeah.
But you're getting a little bit of news now about maybe what their plans for, you know, what they're looking to do in the next year.
Well, the good thing is now that comic companies are getting into the multimedia, it makes a little more sense with Comic-Con. I mean, you know, you have Marvel and DC, that's fine, but you also have Valiant coming out with a movie.
Yeah.
And you have Dark Horse doing things, and you have IDW doing things. So there's a lot more actual multimedia involvement with the comic companies.
Yeah.
So they had reasons for panels this time.
Well, the thing is, Comic-Con becoming such a mainstream thing that the media and the mainstream basically focus on television and movie stuff there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually look at the panel schedule and look at, like, I have DC Comics Twitter on my, so I get notifications of them. They still have all their creator panels. They have all these other stuff that are based on comics.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, no one gets the love. They don't get the love of the media for that.
No.
And it depends who it is, too. Like, I saw some decent coverage for Young Animal.
Yeah.
And really, it's because Gerard Way is leading it.
Exactly.
Like, that's why it got coverage, because people know him.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of like some of the other ones, the panels themselves. There were a couple of big announcements for comic companies that did not get a lot of play that I just happened to catch, and I'm like, okay, we can talk about this, but they didn't get a lot of play because it was the company and it was announcing things involved with titles that are popular but not popular enough to beat out the movie companies,
right?
You know, so but there's a hell of a lot to talk about with the announcements, with going through the trailers. Like, I mean, I think we're just going to have to pick a few trailers to go
through. I mean,
there's so many trailers. It's like, let's just do these.
Out of the ones I've seen so far, the three that I think that were the big ones for me was, and I'm sad that Justice League is number three for me right now.
Mm-hmm.
Thor Ragnarok was my second biggest one, because there was some great stuff in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The 80s feel, and the music that was in that, tell me it didn't sound like it came right out of Tron.
Right.
Yep.
But the number one trailer for me that I saw, we're not going to get into what the trailers were or anything today, because we're going to cover that next, but that Ready Player One trailer was amazing.
Yep.
Yeah.
It is everything that I wanted it to be.
And that was just, and that's just a teaser, because it was only the 2-minute one, so.
What was that, Figgy?
The opening when it had, like, all the houses and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The stacks
Seeing
look like
the
they
stacks.
Came, the stacks look like they came right off the cover of the book.
Yep.
Yes.
If you get the book, Ready Player One, it has a picture of the stacks where all the houses are.
Yep.
And that's what this looked like.
Yeah.
Including, you gotta love, he's coming down past the one window. This is the only thing I want to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And you get this really big girl dancing on a pole with her Oasis, you know, and you know she's working right now. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
She's actually working in a club in the Oasis, and you know
yep.
she doesn't look like this in the club.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. And there's, it's so, this is a teaser that you have to watch over and over because there's so much in it.
Yes.
And there's so many Easter eggs. Like, if you've read the book, you know.
Right.
Yeah. The Easter eggs abound, and that's what the trailer gives you.
When you guys get a chance. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a takeoff of, from this, but go back mm-hmm. to when we saw Valerian. We saw a trailer for a movie that was a surprise. And it's not really a geek movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a heist movie. But this one, the actor, it's one of those heist movies with everybody in the world in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But you got to watch the trailer, because I have to go see this movie just to see this. It's called Logan Lucky.
Oh yeah, you saw that.
Have you seen the trailer?
Yeah.
So you seen Daniel Craig in this?
Yeah, but it has Channing Tatum.
but Daniel Craig.
They ruined Daniel Craig.
Playing a Southerner.
I know.
In jail.
No, see, that's just it. I saw this trailer, and number one, I thought NASCAR, which means I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah.
They've ruined Daniel Craig, so I'm not going to watch it. And Channing Tatum's in it, so Kylan's not going to watch it.
I don't know. The character of Daniel Craig is playing in there. It almost is enough for me to go see it just to see him do this.
Well, the best part is we have a wrestler friend that looks just like that.
Okay.
Yeah, with the bleach blonde hair, obviously bleach blonde, and yeah.
And the best part is, I think he's a manager at a strip club.
No, they're sponsored by a strip club, so he's always posting stuff.
Yeah. But he's always there.
Yeah.
Might as well work there.
Is that the guy that sort of does like the Ric Flair kind of thing? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know the look now.
Yeah, we know.
That way I think is going to be worth seeing just to see what the character is. So
That's definitely a wait till it's out of the theaters kind of thing.
Yeah, I remember I was like, Daniel Craig, Southern accent? What?
And it sounds like it's supposed to be his accent.
It sounds reasonably okay, but it's just, it's Daniel Craig. I can't do it.
This is the first time I think I've ever seen him in something that wasn't a serious or an action role.
Were dying when he was in the back of the car.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I don't know. That, I had to bring that up because we were rolling watching this trailer.
Well, I have to admit, like, true Channing Tatum, you know, I feel. But, you know, like, Golden Circle, though, for some reason.
You're going to have to overlook that in Golden Circle.
He gets a pass.
Gambit. Somehow, earlier this week, I saw a headline that they're still working. He is still working with them on Gambit.
I heard that. I don't.
They're not sure how they're going to do it, but it is still in the works.
Well, interestingly, they said something about taking a slightly different line on it because of how Deadpool came out.
So we're going to Gambit?
But
Gambit Magic Mike crossover?
At the same time, Channing Tatum is saying he hopes it's still PG-13.
Not going to happen.
You know what? Ruin it that way!
Look, Gambit, if you really want to handle Gambit the way Gambit should be,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be R.
It should be.
It should be R. Just
but I mean, look at all the Wolverine. All the Wolverines they came out with that weren't. Awesome,
yeah, but they
that were still enough of a success.
That's true too. But there are ways to write Wolverine where the only reason why Wolverine would not be would been R is because with all the violence that is in the Wolverine movie that you were getting blood and gore. That's the only thing really.
True.
Gambit has some other stuff that's going on in his books that...
I think that's like the... When we did our Logan review,
uh-huh.
I said it's like... the blood and gore would have given it an R, but it's like the language in there, I think, was only in there because they knew they had an R rating.
Yeah.
If they didn't have the R rating, they didn't have to have the language.
No. See, and Gambit is not exactly the nice character that they had in the one X-Men movie.
No.
He's not. That's, yeah. That wasn't well, that, really see, Gambit.
For me, the only Gambit I know is actually from the cartoon in the 90s.
And they, right. they, and that's they not really.
The same you're talking no, about. Yeah. No. Cartoon versions are never the same.
No, Gambit's really a little more.
He's more hardcore.
Yeah, he is. Okay. He is, you know.
Well, we'll see what happens anyway.
Yeah. So, but that's our little teaser of what's going to be going on in comic. Is there anything you wanted to touch on real quick before we actually get into this interview? Because the interview is going to take most of the show.
Yeah, I don't think we should bother with anything else.
Okay. Well, remember, like I said, come out to the Malta Meeple, 1 o'clock on July 29th. Afterwards, we can all take carpools over to see Vicky at the art show, which is right across town, still in Akron.
I'm going to be by myself all day.
Or on Sunday, you can go to the art show.
Or on Sunday, yes.
A whole day's worth.
So, but with that, I guess we're going to let you guys talk to Merle Rasmussen. Hey, Geeksters. We're sitting here with Merle Rasmussen, the original creator of the Top Secret role-playing game from back in... When was that, Kylan?
1980.
I know we've talked about it a couple times on the show, and we know you're a huge fan of this, so this is actually a bucket list moment for you, I think, isn't it?
It really is, yes. This may sound a little crazy, but this is my Gygax moment.
Yeah, that's what I figured. So, Merle, how you doing?
I've never been compared to Gygax, so that's quite a compliment. Thank you.
As we're starting off here, now... You were actually the original creator of Top Secret back in 1980, or before 1980, obviously, but am I correct?
Yes, I started writing the game in 1975, but it wasn't published until February of 1980.
Now, how did you get into actually writing a role-playing game, especially one in espionage that had really never been done before? Because in 1980, role-playing was still a very new type of gaming, really.
Well, Dungeons and Dragons came out in 1974. I knew about it. One of my friends from my childhood, we went to Iowa State University together, he invited me to play D&D with a club at Iowa State, and I played D&D like twice. And I was put in charge, my character was in charge of the mules with the packs on them as we pulled them through the dungeon, and they put gold in the sack, all that. Well, after doing that twice, I was not impressed by fantasy, but I was inspired by the role-playing. Now, I had grown up with TV and movie espionage, and needless to say, James Bond, Mission Impossible, Get Smart, you get the idea.
Yeah,
all these
Man
spy TV movies.
Yeah, in the 60s, the spy was a huge genre in television movies.
Yes.
Because of that, and I hadn't read Tolkien, and I hadn't done anything in the medieval world, I started writing a game, which I played with my friend from childhood, and it was one game master and one agent. So, it was like James Bond. He's all by himself. But he started attacking my character, so I had to build up defenses and hideouts and headquarters that he couldn't infiltrate. And so the rules just kept developing for a year. In 1976, my friend said, "Hey, this is pretty good. You ought to send it to TSR." I said, "Who's that?" "Well, they're the Dungeons and Dragons people." I said, "Okay, I'm a sophomore in college. What do I know?" So I sent a letter to TSR asking if they'd be interested. And I get a letter back from Mike Carr. And he said, "Yes, we'd like to see your work. Would you mind, sending it to us?" And I think I had to sign a cover release or something. So I made a photocopy and sent it to him. And I heard back. And in the margins of Mike Carr's letter was a personal note from Gary Gygax to accept this manuscript as soon as it is typed. So then I had sent them a photocopy of my handwritten work. So then I had to hire a typist to type the manuscript. She quit on me, so I hired another typist. She quit on me. So the third typist finished the manuscript. I then sent a photocopy to TSR, and they liked it. They sent me a contract. And the one thing I thought about was, How much will I regret this if I don't sign this contract? That's the one thing I thought about for just a short, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I signed the contract, didn't have a, somebody said, well, did your agent get you a good deal? Well, yeah, yeah. I was a sophomore in college, you know, it's like, like your agent did a great job. Anyway, the point is, signed the contract, sent it off, and they said, great, we're now throwing your game over the fence to the design department, to Alan Hammack, who will be the editor. Now, Alan Hammack and I got to know each other rather well because he edited my work. He told me one time, Merle was easy. You ask him for something, and he gives it to you 300%. So all he did is cut away the bad stuff and left all the good stuff. That's what editors do.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alan Hammack and I worked on the thing for 3 years. And I was invited up to Lake Geneva to test the game in people's homes and at little conventions. And then they said, just before we went to press, we need a module to go in the box. And first they sent me G3, which was something of the Hall Giant King or Hall Giant, Steading of the Hall Giants or something, mm-hmm. which was a D&D module, maybe D&D. Well, that I couldn't figure out what to do. They said, well, here's B1, Into the Unknown, by Mike Carr. So I plagiarized B1 by Mike Carr very heavily, and you can hold them up. You can hold up Operation Spreckenhaltestelle right beside B1, and instead of monsters, we have like human targets, and instead of magic items, we have technology. So the two, I needed D&D to write the top secret module. One interesting side effect was that I had titled the game Spy World, named it after Gamma World. Sure, Gamma World was out, mine's going to be Spy World, and sent the thing off. Mike Carr filed it in his file cabinet under Top Secret. I filed mine in my file cabinet under Top Secret. So we're talking one day, and we had both called it the Top Secret Project, and that's the name. Top Secret is the name of the game. You know, we both call it that. We don't call it Spy World. We call it the Top Secret thing. You know? So the game became Top Secret. Spreckenhaltestelle became the first module. They put it in a box with percentile dice. I think I had pink dice when I got it. Anyway, two 20-sided die, so you could roll a number from 1 to 100. The thing came out for $10. $10, and I received a royalty. After about 30,000 copies, they needed a second printing, and the thing went to $12. And it stayed at $12 for the next 6 years. And in those 7 years, it sold over 214,000 copies.
Wow.
Now you might say that's pretty good. Dungeons & Dragons was selling 10 times better than that, and Advanced D&D was better than Dungeons & Dragons. So you can imagine Top Secret was a minor title compared to some of these others that were on the market. Jim Ward with Gamma World, he mentioned to me that every time a James Bond movie came out, my sales went up. So he was hoping there'd be a post-apocalyptic movie so his sales would go up. So Gamma World and Top Secret were selling neck and neck, about equal. So Jim and I became rivals and or friends. In those days, we were rivals. Now we're just good friends. And the game caught on in English-speaking countries around the world. In fact, I was getting fan letters and hate letters, of course, from Great Britain, as well as Australia, New Zealand, service people, American soldiers all around the world. I found out later they were playing aboard nuclear subs underneath the ice cap up at the North Pole. They were playing it on aircraft circling the Soviet Union. When they were off duty, they were playing Top Secret on board these submarines and aircraft. And, of course, they played it at their base in the barracks. Well, yeah. And I did not know this was going on at the time. Nice. Found out later.
Training literature.
Well, okay, now, I read years ago that people or certain agencies picked up or got their hands on one of the books, and that the way it was presented was so realistic that they actually had to approach you about... or now, was that just like some marketing stuff to pull people like me? Oh,
that is... That is based on truth, and you'll love this short story.
Okay.
They were play testing Top Secret in Lake Geneva. They had a little campaign going, and one of the players lost some of the paperwork on the street, and a citizen of Lake Geneva picked up the paperwork, read it, took it to the local police. The local police read it, called the FBI. An FBI agent shows up at the offices of TSR. He talked to Mike Carr, because Mike Carr told me about it. He said, who is William Weatherby, and why is he going to be assassinated in Beirut, Lebanon?
Okay. Yes!
Well, Mike Carr said, no, it's a game. We're playtesting a new espionage role-playing game, and there is no William Weatherby. It's a non-player character. There is no such person. The answer the FBI agent told Mike Carr was, okay, this time. And they laughed. And I also heard from people that worked for TSR at the time, some poor FBI agent got assigned to watch their building for a week. So he sat in his car on the block and sat outside and watched them come and go to work and come and go to lunch for a week. Just trying, that was his assignment. And they said, oh, there's the FBI guy sitting in the car. That, you know, they had to move the car, but, you know, there's the FBI guy this morning. Where is he? Oh, he's over there. Anyway, some poor guy. So TSR turned it into a press release. And they actually, I got a copy of the press release. First they called me, and then they sent me the press release, and it said, a game so realistic, it even fooled the FBI.
That I saw that great. Press release. That was,
it's great press.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Well, see, I never thought I would get the truth behind this because, when I'm reading this, I'm like, wow. You know, but it seems just weird enough to be true. and I decided, I said, I have this opportunity. I had to find out.
Well, it's one of those stories that you have to put under the label of you can't write this stuff.
No. I really am happy they've never, well, for that matter, maybe they have investigated me. I don't know. But somebody just said, my publisher, Jason Elliott, said I should get a Freedom of Information Act and ask to see my FBI file and see if I have one.
You are?
And that's recently been done for Gary Gygax. I don't know if you're aware of that.
No.
But somebody actually got Gary Gygax's FBI file, and it talked about he was a member of wargaming clubs, and they tend to be overweight. This is the level of detail that was in this report. So here's Gary Gygax, an overweight wargamer. You know, that's like what they're talking about. They said, oh, and he was a libertarian. That's the other thing they mentioned about him. He's a libertarian, he's overweight, and he hangs out with overweight wargamers. So that's so far what we know about him from the FBI files.
Do they realize that that's like a great cover?
Yeah, just saying. Yeah, and so is what I'm wearing. Yes, too bad you can't see me.
So
5 days a week I wear a suit and tie to work, and I play a very small role in a major convenience store chain. I'm deeply embedded in gasoline and pizza. But anyway, the point is, nobody where I work cares that my hobby is game design. And they really don't care that I'm a world-famous game author. And my wife wants me to kill wasps after this broadcast. So it just shows you where I'm at. I'll probably be cleaning the cat pans later tonight.
That you know, the thing is, I feel like that's what happens to old spies.
You know?
That's a good line.
You know?
Yes.
You know, either you retire and you're cleaning up the cat poop, or, you know.
Well.
Keep spying on the neighbors.
There you go.
Well, you got pretty good success with Top Secret we saw there. Not like D&D success, but, I mean, I was not a role-playing game player when I grew up, but I had heard of Top Secret.
Right.
Then I saw you actually had a couple other games you helped design or worked on with TSR.
Oh, yes. I was involved. You'll love this. TSR published my game in February 1980. In June of 1982, they offered me a job. Alan Hammock almost hired me over the phone, basically, and said, we need a game designer. Can you come work for us? And I get off the phone. My brother says, they're going to pay you to design games? I said, yeah. Why aren't your bags packed? You know, it's like, get out there and do that. So I get up to TSR, and I'm introduced to Alan Hammock's boss, and he's looking at my resume, and he said, Mr. Rasmussen, most of our game designers either have a degree in journalism or English, and I don't seem to see you have a degree in anything. And I said, well, I really don't have a degree in English or journalism. And Alan Hammock leans over and says, Mr. Rasmussen is the author of the Top Secret role-playing game, which is 7% of the adventure gaming market right now. So I got the job, and they assigned me to design D&D modules. And I'll just mention a few. Quagmire, Midnight on Dagger Alley, Lathan's Gold, The Savage Coast, all for D&D. And, Midnight on Dagger Alley might have been for AD&D, but I'm looking around the room trying to remember what the other one is. But I did 4 D&D modules, 1 AD&D module. TSR rejected my robotic role-playing game. Alan Hammock called me in his office 6 months later and said, I wanted you to see this. This is droids. Someone else beat us to the market with the first robotic role-playing game. I then turned around and sold it to White Wolf Magazine. My version is called Nuts and Volts. And it's let me see the title page here. Nuts and Volts, a robotic science fantasy role-playing game by Merle and Jackie Rasmussen, my wife. So literally got rejected, and the world's first role-playing game was not mine. Let's see. What else can I tell you? You talked about designing. I did. Those are my 2 role-playing games, Top Secret and Nuts and Volts, which nobody's seen. Let's see. I did a series. You have to realize that after working for TSR for 22 months, I did 1 Top Secret Ace of Clubs, 1 module during that time. They had me working on D&D rather than Top Secret stuff, which is kind of odd, and answering a lot of fan letters and writing for Dragon Magazine. I turned my fan letter questions into the Rasmussen files, and that's where people remember me for the Rasmussen files in Dragon Magazine. Well, after 22 months, I made it to the 3rd downsizing at TSR. I and 50 people lost their jobs one day. Through no fault of our own, they missed an $18 million sales prediction by $40 million. So I could still collect unemployment compensation. There's no fault of mine. So then I became a freelance writer, and I was writing for whomever would pay me, and I was it was feast or famine. Feast or famine. So you'll see work by me from, the paranoia people. I wrote some things for them. There was a 30-year hiatus in my game designing or game publishing. During that time, this is in the adventure, the role-playing industry, 30-year hiatus. During that time, I wrote about 4 or 5 Opoly games. Believe it or not, Newtonopoly, Knoxville Raceopoly, Rooftopopoly, Caseyopoly, I'm trying to think of the 5th one. But anyway, I wrote, Lutheropoly, The Life and Times of Martin Luther. Anyway, these games I actually got paid to work on. and they were published. I did Keep Iowa Beautiful Travel Bingo Game, which I'm sure you've got a copy of. I think they sold 450 copies. During this time, I also wrote Save Your Brain, You're Going to Need It, card game. It was for fourth graders in the state of Iowa. The Iowa Department of Public Health provided this to fourth graders in Iowa to protect their brain. It was a card game where you have to do matching, but I had a deck of cards, and instead of hearts, diamonds, you know, spades, and clubs, I had brain references, noodle, marbles, gray matter, light bulb, and it was a deck of cards, and on they said things like, don't wear headphones while skateboarding, you know, don't sniff drugs, don't sniff glue, 52 different things you shouldn't do to protect your brain, don't dive into water if you don't know how deep it is. Anyway, they sold like 4,500 copies of this card game in the state of Iowa.
What?
And it's called Save Your Brain. Yes.
Awesome.
So that's outside the role-playing world.
Yeah.
But I did the card game. I did the travel bingo. I did the board games. But nobody in the game in the role-playing industry knows about that. You're the first. You could break this story. Merle actually wrote Opoly games. And card games and travel bingo games.
Awesome. We have an exclusive.
Well, I will take that exclusive. We got a Merle Rasmussen exclusive on Geek Watch 1. I will take that.
You said you had a large break from role-playing. How did you get back into role-playing games and design?
Well, in 2014, several people. One thing that happened was Jason Elliott, who was a fan of Top Secret, wanted to get a hold of me. He contacted Harold Johnson and Tim Kask and was asking, do you have his phone number? Can I reach him? And he was wanting me to write a D&D module for Gygax magazine. And I did do that, and it appears in Gygax number 4, Operation Rendezvous Oasis. Well, in the same time I was talking with Mr. Jason, somebody said, oh, Merle, could you come to our convention, Nexus 1, in Milwaukee? And that I was asked by Harold Johnson to come to that. And, oh, by the way, Merle's around. Hey, maybe we could get him to come to GaryCon. Could you come to GaryCon, Merle? So in 2014, I went to Nexus. I went to GaryCon. I believe I got published in Gygax magazine number 4. A strange thing, Jason Elliott had run into me in 1987, 1988. He was a teenager, came to see me at Omicron, and he's the only person that came to hear me speak at my seminar. So I had him come up to the table and signed autographs and talked to him for an hour. So from 1987 to 2014, he was a fan, and then he was now is a publisher, and he wanted to publish my work. He approached me in 2014 and said, have you considered upgrading Top Secret? So it wouldn't be a Cold War game, it would be a 21st century espionage role-playing game. And I thought about it, 5 minutes, and said, well, yeah, I'd be interested. Could we get Alan Hammack, the original editor? Because he made my work better. And they said, well, if he's available. So Alan Hammack was available in 2014. I was available. We have real jobs, so we don't have to rely on income from role-playing games. We have real world jobs. And so Alan is doing this in his spare time. I'm doing this on my spare time. And we started pulling in experts, different game systems around hobbyists. And I'll just tell you, James Carpio from the East Coast saw me in 2014, asked if he could buy me a drink. I said, no, I've already ordered my meal. Could you buy my dessert? And he did. So anyway, James Carpio, he's worked on the text and designed the combat system. Jason Elliott was very interested in being a designer, and he was working on automobile conflict combat. We had Chad Parrish. He's involved with the Dead Game Society. He interviewed me I believe at Nexus in 2014. He wanted to write. I said, well, why don't you do a module? We'll put it in the box. So all these people, at some point I ran into AJ Davenport, and he got assigned to design the shield, the Game Master shield. So all these people are coming out of the woodwork to assist. So it's my name on the box, but we have a team of names that are contributors. We also have a lot of consultants. We have illustrations. We have playtesters. We wanted about 17 playtesters and got over 100 of them. So we had to shut down our request overnight one time. So about 100 different playtest groups have tested this thing. We took it on the road, codename Acrid Herald. And for 2015, 2016, it was Acrid Herald. And we played it from coast to coast at different conventions. And Acrid Herald was receiving good reviews from the gamers. They loved the idea of covert action, espionage role-playing game. Well, just this past March at GaryCon, we officially released the title, which is Top Secret New World Order, The Espionage Role-Playing Game by Merle Rasmussen. We had hats made. We had poker chips made. We had lanyards. We had stuff like bookmarks, all kinds of good stuff to hand out to the fans. We had big 8-foot by 8-foot vinyl banners on display. One of them had holes cut in it so you could put your face in the cover of the game, that kind of thing. We had a lot of send-off at GaryCon. Well, I will be at, what's that thing called? Gen Con 50 in August. And they've asked me to speak. What are they speaking about? Well, basically, I've been asked to speak, and the topic is, I'm with another bunch of old guys. TSR comes of age. It'll be at the Indianapolis Convention Center during Gen Con Saturday. So TSR comes of age, and Frank Mentzer, Harold Johnson, and Steve Winter will be with me on stage that day for an hour to 90 minutes. So I'm sure you'll want to come to Gen Con and see us there.
That's terrible, because I was there last year. Kylan was there 2 years ago. This year, neither one of us could make it.
Yeah, I'm like,
Well, we could take pictures, send them to you.
Man.
Well, Andy may be going. He may have to go and take, like, video for us.
Yeah.
We have a friend who's actually also a role-playing game designer.
He's the gentleman I was telling you about.
Yeah, Andy Hopp.
Yes.
So. We'll talk to you more about that after this.
No, this is my interview, so I don't want to ask what he's designing. However, I will say if he'd like to design a top-secret module, he should get in contact with Jason Elliott.
Okay.
We are actually looking for designers. And if you get our stamp of approval, meaning if Merle Rasmussen says it's good enough, then you can put our TSR's stamp of approval on your module. And also, we're encouraging people that if they want to write modules for the new game system, they can do so even without our approval.
Well, how would they get a hold of him?
We prefer that they get our approval, but that's okay. Yeah. We know people are going to design for it. You can be official or unofficial. Let's put it that way.
Well, I did see this new game is actually being published under TSR. Now, how did that happen? I thought Wizards of the Coast owned all things TSR.
Well, you'll love this. They weren't using TSR. It was abandoned.
Okay.
And the words top secret were also abandoned. Also, the words top secret are in the American lexicon. No one can own the words top secret. So what we did is a spin. First of all, they got the right, they registered TSR, and there was no objection. So it is now a registered trademark. At least, let me look at the box. It is, it's a registered trademark, TSR. And Top Secret New World Order is now trademarked. And the New World Order is to tell you it's not like the first two versions. It's not the original Top Secret, and it's not Top Secret SI. it's something new. And the New World Order means it's not the Cold War. It's the war on terror, the war on drugs, the war, how shall I put this? The world is now in a new place than it was 30 years ago.
Yeah. You can almost say it's even a lot more dangerous world than it was.
Well, the premise of my game is that ICON, the International Covert Operations Network, is noticing that the United Nations is sending troops to stop to separate warring factions, and we are still not very successful. And the World Court was having a lot of trouble. And so what happened was the world intelligence community got together, you know, the heads of the CIA and the FSB and the MI6, and they got together and said, let's form a ultra-national organization to prevent war in the first place, to prevent genocide, to prevent world crimes beyond the scope. So it's ultra-national. It's bigger than any nation. And each nation then would contribute agents and resources to this organization in their black budgets so that it wouldn't show up on the books. But these agents are from all these different nations working together for the common good. That's the premise of the game. Now, you don't have to follow the International Covert Operations Network plan. You can create your own network, your own spy group. You could recreate old ones. Some people are interested in the Cold War. Or you can create your own. You can call it, you know, the Geeks, Geek Watch 1 covert operations of some type. But the rules allow you to, you don't have to be in my universe. The one fun thing is the world is our world. In other words, you don't have to reinvent, you don't have to draw a new map. It's already available to us on Google. Mm-hmm. And you can find maps of everything quite readily and quite accurately. So there's not a lot of designing maps. What you have to design is encounter areas and hideouts and things that would interest your group. So I don't want to call it generic, but we're trying to bowl down the middle of the alley and hit most of the pins. That's what we're trying to do. Give you a broad rule base on how the secret covert world works, and then you can design your own world around that, or your own gameplay around that world.
I almost got that vibe. It was a similar feel to Top Secret. Now, mind you, Top Secret definitely was embedded in the Cold War, but it felt like that there was enough space there that if you wanted to go after organized crime, you could, or if you wanted to, you could make it as big or as small as you wanted. I mean, in the basic guide, you had very exhaustive list of organizations, along with intelligence organizations as well as law enforcement organizations. So that was something that I found very, it was unique to me, especially for my first gaming experience with that system. And it feels like that's you're doing that, but even more so with a New World Order.
Well, the good news is we're 30 years later. We have, as you might notice, drones. We have the internet. We have these things called cell phones. So the world is much more technological. Also, I introduced, because guns are so lethal, mm-hmm. I've introduced a lot of non-lethal weapons, a lot of new first aid techniques that we've discovered in our modern wars. Like nowadays, you can get shot by a shotgun and survive because of medical technology that inserts little blood-absorbing capsules in your body that stop the immediate bleeding. Mm-hmm. And they also have special chemicals that conceal bad lacerations. So people can survive combat, so we're putting those kind of first aid things into the game. I should also say there's underwater combat rules with all kinds of underwater weapons and ammunition. There's underwater drones, one-man, two-man submarines. There are things that the one I like, and I'm sorry this isn't in the game yet, but I'll tell you about it. For $499.95, you can buy a diver's knife that if you press the handle, it has compressed CO2 in the handle. It compressed the button. So you stab an aggressive shark, you press the button, compressed CO2 enters the body of the shark, freezing its organs so it stops bleeding, and the expansion underwater causes the shark to float to the surface. Now, this is real. $499.95 diving knife. Okay? I introduced it in a game in a North Texas role-playing game convention, and every agent wanted to have one. Well, they were on a mission, and they wound up having to rescue somebody who had fallen in a river, and there were alligators, and the alligator attacked. So one of the agents uses his diving knife against a 13-foot alligator, stabs him at the belly, releases the CO2. The alligator floats to the surface. He's dead. They decide to keep the alligator for its hide, and they name this new device the Inflatigator because that's how they used it. So the Inflatigator, I said, now you realize you don't have any more CO2. And the spy said, well, I can still use it as a knife, can't I? Well, yes. It just doesn't have compressed CO2 in the handle anymore. People embrace any kind of bizarre technology I can bring into the game, and I've done that. I've been scouring for bizarre technology, and it doesn't take a lot of it does take a lot of imagination. What am I saying?
Yeah.
You have to find it. You have to put it out there. I will tell you one funny thing. I had a playtester looking at my rules, and they were disappointed that I didn't have aliens and robots. They said, what do you mean you can't have aliens and robots? I said, no, it's the real world. We don't have ESP either. We don't have zombies, you know.
Right.
And they said, but if you want to, you could put it in your own home version of the game. Go after UFOs, go after zombie apocalypse if you want. Somebody once asked me about the Q manual from the James Bond 007 game.
Yeah.
And I told him, it was the best accessory for Top Secret that had ever been written. In other words, people bought the Q manual and used it to play Top Secret. So I don't care. I really encourage that.
Well, actually, that was kind of goes with my question, what you were just talking about anyway. Now, you talk about you're in the current real world. Do you have any actual fantastic spy tech? Kind of like what Q would be coming up with. Or is it all realistic stuff that's actually out there?
I tried to stay pretty close to realistic. I tried to stay away from science fiction, but if I told you there is a device that'll x-ray your home 50 feet through your house and tell where you are inside the building, you probably wouldn't believe me. But there really are devices that can detect living people inside of houses. There are also strange situations where if you're trying to get onto or off of a military base or a naval base and you're not supposed to be going somewhere, they now have giant nets that flash up and catch people. They catch the entire car in a giant net, and that is a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
now, that's bizarre, and that's real world. It doesn't take much when I'm talking about snake bots. Snake bots are actually being considered for exploration of Mars because of the strange terrain there. A snake bot can go places that a wheeled vehicle or a legged person can't go. So snake bots are amphibious, and they can come from water onto a beach. So there's some very bizarre things coming. And one thing I did, you may have heard of Big Dog from DARPA. It was a robot used to carry infantrymen's backpacks. And you could put 4, 6, or 8 backpacks on this big dog, and he would just follow you on missions through the woods. And it's called Big Dog. It's a pretty intelligent robot. Well, I used the same idea and produced for a module solar collecting, battery operated surveillance camels called, what do I call them? Dromedaries, but they're basically robot camels, and they can spit on you. and they can have super slippery or super sticky fluids. There really are super slickery and super sticky fluids, which are used to contain people. So you take technology from multiple sources, throw it together, and you've got a robotidary. Yes, that's the one hump version. And then we also have for other parts of the world the whatever the other, yes, Bactrian camel robots in another part of the world. So that's Merle being funny, adding all these things to that. The camels are my invention based on real world stuff.
Yeah.
If that helps explain it. Yes.
Well, we're getting towards the end of this. Why don't you tell us about the Kickstarter? I know you have, by the time this episode drops, it'll be real close to the end of the Kickstarter, but where are we at so far?
Well, just before we went on this recording, I looked. We were pledged so far $98,006 from 1,486 people with 7 days to go. The Kickstarter does not end until 11:42 a.m. Central Daylight Time on Thursday, July 27th. So please encourage you and your friends to go to the Kickstarter, which you can Google at Top Secret Kickstarter. And I think you can also find it looking up the company's name, Top Secret New World Order. And they'll get you to the Kickstarter. We didn't realize what we were getting into. We looked at a $12,000 goal, and we met that in about 20 minutes. So now we're about 800% funded. I said 800-plus percent funded. I think we're going to get over the $100,000 mark here in the next 24 to 48 hours.
I think so.
$100,000 is a lot to play with. You have to pay the Kickstarter people, but then you've got money to go to the publishing, I should say the printing companies and the distribution warehouses, and you can still make a profit and hopefully for me a royalty. Now that's the Kickstarter program. For your information, in the game you get a box set, 2-inch thick box, and it has a lot in it. Let me just tell you, in case you're wondering, you get the Top Secret New World Order, 128-page rule book. It may be longer than that, but we tell people it's 128 pages. An administrator's screen, administrator's log, 4 player mats, 10 agent dossiers, 20 vehicle sheets, 48 hazard markers, and an introductory mission, Operation, what is it called? Oh, The White Queen. The White Queen by, I'm going to get his name right. I said it, or Chad. Chad Parrish. So all that is in a box, weighs about 3 pounds, and we're very encouraged that this will be out in people's hands in November. That's November. So we're very pleased with the response from our Kickstart group.
Awesome. Well, now, I have a question, because I saw that at the $65 level is all gone, but like at the $100 level, I noticed that $100 and above, that you can have a personalized icon identification card. So how would that work? I mean, do we personalize it ourselves, or
yeah? My understanding is that you will be asked to present your name, your alias. I'm trying to remember all the things you can put on the card. Basically, they're going to manufacture a unique card for each person at that level. So say that you want to be known as, your code name is GeekWatch1. Well, that's what will be on the card. Also, I think they're going to take your picture, what you send them. Probably, like, take a picture with your, a camera or a camera phone, these new special devices, smartphones, and send it in with your information, and they will manufacture a little, I'm trying to see one here in my office, a little, not 3x5, it's smaller than 3x5, but it will have the icon symbol on it, as well as your picture, your name, and your alias. I'm trying to think what else to tell you about it. It's one of a kind, it's unique, and I'm not sure if they're going to continue that after the Kickstarter. I will tell you, they're looking at a hardback book that's only available during the Kickstarter. which is the rules and the module for $50, but it's in a hard cover. I believe it's a black book with gold imprint, gold-colored imprint. That thing is only available during Kickstarter, and I'm beginning to think these badges might be only available during Kickstarter as well.
I swear, it's not leaving my sight. I wouldn't even take it with me to a game. Like, I'll just, boom.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that my shield lanyard, so.
See, that goes on your shield lanyard.
No, because two different organizations.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes. Well, we're hoping the PDF sells as well. We have been approached by people who want the PDF rules and the printed rules, which is pretty exciting. That's coming up. And that was less expensive. I think the PDF was, say, $10 or $20.
Right.
Forgive me, I've forgotten. Yeah. But the box game, we're going for $50. Mm-hmm. So everything you need to play is $50. But you could get the PDF for, I think, $10. I better tell you $20, just to be sure.
Okay.
But it's on the Kickstarter. I was just going to say that we are looking. I've already been hit up by... people that want to write for us. We contacted Doug Niles. Doug Niles did Top Secret SI. He will be writing for us.
Wow.
That much I can't. Yes. Doug Niles, who wrote Top Secret Special Investigations for TSR, will be writing for the Top Secret New World Order system. Now, what's funny is I wrote for his system. I wrote a G4 file, Guns, Gadgets, and Getaway Gear. That's something I wrote when I was freelancing, and that was for Top Secret SI. So Doug Niles will be writing for us, and he's thrilled to be asked. Let's see, what else can I tell you? Been asked what else I've got, and we've been discussing other products. I can tell you something else.
Okay.
The Top Secret New World Order will be followed by Pulp Era. Pulp Era by James Carpio. And Pulp Era will be the 1930s pre-superheroes, if you kind of know that flavor.
You're right in the middle of Kylan's wheelhouse now.
Well,
if there's two things for Kylan, it was spies and action, and then pulp side. That's Kylan in a nutshell.
I'm done. I'm done. I just why don't I just send my wallet to you right now, Merle?
Just give him your account information.
Just.
You'll be glad to know both systems have compatible combat called the Lucky 13 engine.
Oh, I'm loving this.
James Carpio designed the combat for Top Secret New World Order. He's using it for Pulp Era. We'll use the same combat system. We believe the games will be compatible.
I will never be home.
Or you will be home. We can play over Skype.
That's true. Now, could you explain... for the listeners, how Lucky 13 works. I'm familiar with it, but this is really cool.
Very easily and quickly, and that's the good part. Imagine, if you will, you have attributes, and secret agents have the attributes nerve, suave, pulse, intellect, and reflex. So on each of these, you have a die. D4, D6, D8, D10, D12. So imagine you have five dice called attribute dice. You also have tradecraft dice. Tradecraft dice are signal intelligence, human intelligence, technical intelligence, and combat. They also are a die, D4, D6, D8, D10, D12. So depending on what agent you have attributes, and you've got training called tradecraft. The third part are asset dies. For example, a gun, a person, a special device will have an asset die. And for example, a pistol might have a D6. A rifle might have a D8. But the point is, you have attribute dice that your character is created by, tradecraft dice that have to do with his training, and asset dice having to do with what he's carrying with him. If you are, say, in a combat situation, you are going to roll one appropriate attribute die, and in this case, it'd be a pulse, plus a tradecraft die, let's call it combat, and the asset let's call it a gun. So let's say your pulse is D6, your combat is D8, and your asset is a D10. Roll the 3 dice. You must meet or beat a 13 to succeed at a tradecraft task, like shooting somebody. So you can imagine, if you're rolling a 6, an 8, and a 10-sided die, you may or may not roll 13. So if 13 or you beat or succeed, beat or exceed 13, you hit the bullet, and then there's so much damage. Couple things can happen. Burst and blowback. Burst is when you roll the highest number on an attribute die, you roll again and add the result. And it also can affect a tension track, which can go down by 1. Blowback is when you roll a 1 on an attribute die, your character is saddled with a dilemma, and the tension track increases by 1. What we're talking about, 13 is easy, but if you miss too many rolls, the number goes to 14, number goes to 15, gets harder and harder, more stressful to do the right thing. It's very cinematic. In other words, you want to get the 13 and be successful, or things go badly and now you have to get a 14. Things go bad again, now you have to get a 15. So just like the movies, things can go horribly bad or they can do horribly well. We also discovered this works in real life. And it can be gritty. You can play the game very gritty, realistic, or you can play the game and with gritty and realistic. You may not have any fame points to save your life. You can play the cinematic version where good things happen, very good things can happen, and very bad things can happen. So the lucky 13 system is what it's called, or the lucky 13 engine, and we have other modifiers. You might have background talents that come into play from time to time. And I know in challenges like hand-to-hand combat, the person you are fighting also gets to roll 13s against you. So it's possible you can be challenged to roll this 13, then somebody else is rolling 13, trying to fight back at you. Okay. So I hope that's explanatory, but it's a simple, we don't have single integers assigned to a value. You have die, d4, d6, d8, d10, d12 die that you're using all the time. Yes.
This is a different kind of system, and I was doing in my research, I came across at least a little bit of an explanation of the Lucky 13 system there. And, you know, I think this would be really interesting to have a die-based system like this, and especially like when you watch a movie and things are going badly for the agent, and you have enough bad things happen, you're sitting on the edge of your seat, and that tension does go up. So I think that's going to make it. That certainly make for a stressful gameplay.
Yes.
we're hoping it not only helps the gameplay at the end of the mission. If the agent survives, he can spend mission points to raise his attribute die or his tradecraft die. So you could go from a D4 to a D6 if you have successfully finished a mission.
Okay.
So slowly your character can develop. I suppose he could have all D12s eventually.
Wow.
He would be James Bond.
Or Jason Bourne.
Who's that other guy? Jason Bourne.
Jason Bourne. Or Jack Bauer. One of those
Jacks. Oh, yes. Yeah. It's Jack Bauer. Now you know what we're talking about. Yes. Save the world or destroy it.
One of the two.
Yeah. Well, Merle, this has been great. I know you gave us a certain amount of time, and we're getting real close to the end of that. So why don't you let everybody know where they can actually get a hold of you if you have any questions, or if they just want to talk to you and send fan mail.
Oh, well, gee, thanks. I think we're going to route it through Top Secret New World Order. Try the website, www.topsecretnwo, I believe is how you get to it. I'm reluctant. Let me find if I've got anything else to tell you here. No, I think that's the best way to go through the publisher. Not that I'm afraid of all you gamers out there, but I like my privacy. I will tell you, there's a website, www.topsecretnwo.com. And I believe you will get a hold of Jason Elliott there, who's the publisher of TSR. And let me repeat it, www.topsecretnwo.com. I think it's probably the best way to get messages back. To give you my phone number or my home address. But you could write letters. You could write a letter to the TSR group. I think the company is, well, the company is based out of New York, but the publisher is in California. So it gets very, very, very tricky. We developed the game in 4 time zones. We'd get on Skype and play. And we had somebody in the Eastern, Central, Mountain, and Pacific time zones. So it has kind of had to coordinate play. So hence, we're not just playing in the United States. We seem to have customers in United States, Canada, Great Britain, Germany, Italy. Let me see here. We even heard from Sweden and Finland. Wow. People are buying the game in those countries.
Cool.
Oh, yeah, France. We had 5 buyers from France. So I figure that Vladimir Putin is having his FSB agents buy the game throughout the world and train them. That's what I think they're using the game for.
You think so?
I'm sure there's going to be a copy in the Kremlin eventually. Perhaps I should just send them a free copy.
No, they'll just realize that you're just training all of us gamers how to be better spies.
Well, worse, I'd be training real spies how to be gamers. So that'd be very strange, too.
You know what? That's true.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, it's been a great pleasure of mine to speak with you tonight. I like your format because I like to talk. I have a gift for gab, and that helps.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Okay, Geeksters, like we said, that was Merle Rasmussen. I want to thank Merle for coming on the show. That was a great interview. We had a great time with it.
Oh, you know what? Merle was like the coolest interviewee because he was just like, he had this way of like, it was almost like you could wind him up and just let him go.
Yeah.
You know? And
that's the best interviews when they really like to talk.
Yes.
Yes.
Just ask them one thing and let them talk for a few minutes.
And you know, it was awesome because I finally got the straight story on something I had heard for years. You know, the whole story about the FBI.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of those things. Like,
you know, you're doing something right with an espionage game when the FBI gets interested.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
You know,
that's how legit it is. That's why you guys have to go and support the Kickstarter.
I promised myself I remember reading that story. I was like, if I ever have the opportunity to ask somebody how true this was, I was going to do that.
You see, you see, Geeksters' dreams come true.
They do. I'm like,
you can be thinking one of these days if I ever get the chance, and just like Kylan, you might get the chance.
That's right.
Good saying.
And also remember, hit that Kickstarter. You got like less than 24 hours left after this drops.
Uh-huh.
So hit the Kickstarter. If you miss it, we will let you know a lot earlier when the Pulp Era Kickstarter hits, and I think they said they're planning on January.
Yeah, my money's already gone for that. So
we're getting a game collection, and we don't really have opportunity to play games often because we're so busy.
I know.
I have a whole bookcase full of game, board games and stuff that we've not had a chance to play.
Yeah. I got to do something about that because I'm like,
you know, if you miss the Kickstarter, it will be in stores.
It will.
Yes, so,
it will.
You know, there's a chance.
They're looking at a street date of trying to get this out by November, so.
Yep.
You know, but if you want to get your own actual bona fide ID for Icon.
Yeah, you got to hit the Kickstarter.
You got to hit the Kickstarter.
Along with the hardbound book for the, it's the $100 level, you get your own ID and a hardbound book for the game.
Oh, yeah, so, with the gold leaf lettering, all that stuff.
Get the extras, so you can guess what level Kylan got it at.
I was hoping for the $65 one.
That went within their first couple hours.
Yeah, though. That went in the first couple hours, because you also got some of the original Top Secret minis from back.
But they only
the
had 80s. So many, that was just it.
That's why it was limited, yes.
Yeah.
But as we're getting ready to wrap this up for tonight, did you guys have anything else you want to hit on before coming for next week?
No, we'll have plenty next week.
We got plenty for next week.
Remember, Geeksters, next week we're talking Comic-Con. We're going to go, like I said, all week watching everything we can and getting all the information we can glean out of Comic-Con.
Catch up on our social media, because I've been trying to get it out there.
Maybe we'll focus a little more on some of the lesser-known stuff that happened at Comic-Con.
Yep, exactly.
Because it's like, everybody know, at that point, everybody will have seen the trailers. Everybody will have seen the major panels. Right. We'll see if we can find some of the stuff, the little gems that you didn't know about.
Exactly.
Well, we still got one day or half a day.
That's true. We're recording on Sunday, so we still have... No, it's a full day, because it's 3 hours behind. They're in California,
so we still got
they haven't done anything yet today.
Exactly.
And today is Doctor Who Day. They're supposed to be... there's supposed to be some footage they're showing at the Doctor Who panel.
Oh,
so that may be something that gets released. We'll see. And if it doesn't get released, we'll at least get a description of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there we go.
So, and with that, remember, Geeksters, you can always find us on the internet. Anywhere, everywhere, GeekWatch1, GeekWatch1.com, all social media at GeekWatch1. And if you put GeekWatch1 into any search bar anywhere and you don't get us, let us know. Miss Dawn will take care of the problem.
Oh, I will.
You can also send us emails at geekwatch1@gmail.com. We're members of the Tangent Bound and the Weebie Geeks networks at tangentboundnetwork.com and weebiegeekspc.com. And then with that, from Kylan and Dawn and Vicky and myself, just remember,
no matter where you go, there you are.
You're listening to a Weebie Geeks Network podcast.